refine the message that actually pops up in an engagement.
So the work of a developer is a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and determining which of these different AI applications is better at which aspect.
Yeah.
And creating an autonomous Twitter account, an autonomous bot that is running it through that combination. Sahej, do you have any competitors here? Are you the first person to crack this, or are there like rival apps, other people doing the exact same thing to your knowledge? What's the competitive landscape like?
I haven't seen someone doing exactly what I am doing. There are AI tools that can summarize builds for you. Like there are NASDAQ listed companies that can analyze policies in real time. This is some tools that helps like congressional people to write these bills, help them refine the bills and stuff. So far as I know, nobody has built this tool yet. I am the first one.
And if we take it away from the specific context of like bill analysis, when it comes to autonomous Twitter accounts that can argue with people and replicate tone, draw upon a database of information, but also draw upon news stories and new information and new facts, like that sounds like somebody else out there must be building something like that. Are you aware of other competitors in that space?
I haven't seen people do that myself. So if you find someone, do let me know.
As far as you know, you're the guy.
There are some tools I've seen that are just GPT wrappers, lets you help write a tweet, but no one's doing what I am doing, as in have an autonomous bot that can talk all day, every day.
You are at an age right now that's like not dissimilar to when Zuckerberg started Facebook. And I think that the way that you are looking at the opportunity and the responsibility ahead of you is comparable to that. There's this incredible opportunity. It's going to happen. Somebody's going to do it, whether you do it or somebody else. There's a lot of pressure for you to be the one because you've got to jump on it and you've built something that maybe is just like, you know.
It's working.
Yeah. You've got a proof of concept and you have an awareness of how this could go really, really wrong. And when you're young and looking for opportunity and trying to break through, I think that 99% of the time people are going to be like, yeah, no, I'll handle it. I will roll the dice on this and I will try to make my fortune and I will try to do it ethically. But it doesn't always go very well. One of these lines here hit me. The future of civic communication is autonomous. That scares the hell out of me. The future of civic communication is robots? And I have to imagine eventually the robots are going to start arguing with each other and having conversations with each other. And I also have to imagine that not everybody who uses autonomous civic communication is going to be as transparent as you've been and label it as autonomous. We're going to not know who's real and who is not real in our civic communication. Is it not possible that 10 years from now or like a year from now, we look back on the absolute breakdown of civil discourse into just a hall of mirrors where we have no idea if we're fighting with humans, if what we're reading is real? One of the other ethical guidelines is that you're trying to make AI that is based on facts. I'm certain that other people in this space don't care about that. Do you think you might be like sitting in some kind of like congressional hot seat on some panel of like how democracy was destroyed and the role that you played in it?
I don't think this is destroying democracy. I think this is bringing information. This is bringing facts to the people that, you know, today maybe the legacy media is not covering actively, but this is just like part of a subject matter expert talking about the things. Like, I don't see how this is destroying democracy. If you think just about the technology itself, like this, if you don't have any big funding or if you don't have big backers to amplify your message, you're building your own influence and you can run the campaign yourself. Like, to me, it actually is helping democracy because anyone can now go run for a campaign if they're competent enough. And like, you know, the world would decide if they're competent enough to run for an office or not, right? That's how the voting is. But at least this tool gives them the opportunity to be able to market themselves, which we don't see happening today.
I think that's a fair point to be a Sahej's advocate here. If tomorrow I find myself facing a situation where some large organization has a whole team of crisis comms operators and technologists who are spreading all kinds of lies about me, maybe your tool could democratize my response. And I could say, I want to have an ethical, fact-based response. There's no way I, as one journalist, can sit here and bat down every lie. But I could hire this tool at an affordable rate to represent the truth. And maybe, even if this kind of like dystopian situation comes to pass, that the civil discourse is degraded by unethical bots and AI, maybe your role in this is counterbalancing that with something that actually has some integrity to it. I will leave myself open to that possibility. But maybe a good way to end this conversation, Saj, is to say, I think that what you've built is powerful and promising. If I'm right about that and you're onto something here, you will have people pushing you to degrade those standards every day. There will be enormous pressure for you to back off of the ethical standards that you're describing. And I guess I'll just wish you good luck.
Thank you.
That's your Canada Land show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about it at jesse@canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Our director of audio is Max Collins. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by so-called Syndication. Is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about the TIFF over at TIFF. We'll talk about that big Los Angeles music festival that never actually existed. We'll talk about a pretty horrific hate crime in Montreal that happened to be caught on video. But mostly, we'll talk about the ghost of Justin Trudeau's media policy legacy and why it is going to keep on haunting us.
You'll always find me alongside you, cheering along.
Wait for that. First things first, the big media story unfolding right now is that TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival, has allegedly censored a documentary about the Hamas massacre of October 7th, 2023.
The team behind Barry Average's documentary, The Road Between Us, The Ultimate Rescue, is accusing TIFF of censoring its own programming after the movie was pulled from this year's lineup.
The Road Between Us by Toronto documentary maker Barry Average was scheduled to screen this fall at TIFF. This documentary tells the story of retired Israeli soldier and grandfather Noam Tibon, who went on an October 7th rescue mission to save his granddaughters when they were surrounded by Hamas terrorists. He succeeded in rescuing them and also rescued survivors of the Nova Music Festival. Deadline Hollywood broke the news. The TIFF would not show this movie. They pulled the film. And the reason that TIFF gave for that, initially, was that the filmmakers had failed to get legal clearance of the footage used.
TIFF has released a statement that reads, the film was withdrawn by TIFF because general requirements for inclusion in the festival and conditions that were requested when the film was initially invited were not met, including legal clearance of all footage.
Which includes Hamas body cam footage. The snuff films that Hamas live-streamed while they were slaughtering men, women, and children. The filmmakers ignored that excuse, called the situation out for what they believed it was. Censorship. And then came TIFF excuse number two. Reporter Barry Hertz in the Globe and Mail reported that TIFF executive director Cameron Bailey had told the filmmakers that the real reasons for pulling the documentary were, quote, the risk of major disruptive protest actions around the film's presence at the festival, including internal opposition.
The purpose of the requested conditions was to protect TIFF from legal implications and to allow TIFF to manage and mitigate anticipated and known risks around the screening of a film about highly sensitive subject matter, including potential threat of significant disruption.
All right, if you've lost count, we now have three reasons for pulling the film that were gestured to by TIFF. And to flesh those reasons out a little bit, it would go something like this. Reason number one, Hamas has not signed off on the use of their intellectual property. And we just can't take on the liability of a possible copyright infringement lawsuit from Hamas. Excuse number two. We remain gutless cowards, just as we were last year when we buckled to protests over the excellent documentary Russians at War by Anastasia Trofimova, which, as a likely result of our actions, has still not been widely released or seen. And finally, excuse number three, our own staffers object to screening a film that depicts Israelis as sympathetic human beings who can sometimes exhibit noble traits, like looking out for one another during a bloody pogrom, and we are afraid that our own staffers will join the protests against us. Unwilling to fully articulate and stand behind any of those dubious positions, and in response to global mockery and disgust about the Hamas licensing story, which went viral, Cameron Bailey again changed his story on Wednesday night, reversing himself, apologizing for the harm caused, and promising to work with TIFF's lawyers and the filmmakers to find a path to screening this film after all. Now, unless there is yet another reversal of TIFF's position on this, which certainly could happen, I think we can expect a full show at the screening, as the global attention that this mishandling has caused will no doubt triple the size and ferocity of the inevitable protest aimed at shutting this movie down. And that is how we handle things in the Canadian movie biz. Ronit Novak, you are an old hand at the show now, founder of The Grain, a Substack podcast newsletter all about the impact of AI on the future of creativity. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Ronit, remember Justin Trudeau?
I sure do.
Hi, I'm Justin Trudeau.
Hi, I'm Justin Trudeau.
Hi, I'm Justin Trudeau.
Hi, I'm Justin Trudeau.
That guy, as prime minister, got more involved with the media than any prime minister since Pierre Trudeau.
Right.
Since the first let's get a whole Canadian culture thing going.
Yeah.
Guys. Hey, we have respect for journalists in this country. They ask tough questions and they're supposed to. Okay?
Sorry. Go ahead, Omar.
This morning you were saying that...
Justin had a very ambitious list of media goals.
We know that the media world and the press world are facing significant challenges and transitions into this digital era. That's why we are working with them to ensure that whether it's tens of millions of dollars for small publications or whether it was increasing the funding to CBC Radio-Canada that the previous government had cut, these are things that we are very much continuing to do. We will continue to help them transition into a digital world.
He set out to save the newspapers. He was going to modernize the whole CanCon film and TV funding regime for the digital age, make it compatible with streamers. He was going to level the playing field and make American digital companies pay their fair share through a digital services tax. He was going to curb the toxicity of online discourse, put an end to misinformation or disinformation, or at least try to fight it through legislation.
Yeah.
What is left of those dreams?
They got carnied. They are no longer relevant because Donald Trump is the president of the United States and our elbows are elsewhere.
It is like night and day. If you go through that list and you look at it now, he did not save the newspapers, but they are on life support with the salary subsidy, with the newspaper bailout. That might be the most successful of these policies. His plan to modernize the CanCon regime, the Online Streaming Act, is now under attack by Republicans.
Yes.
It's getting roped into the trade war.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of see their point, because what they're saying is, and Michael Geist, internet law professor, was always saying this is going to be a trade issue sooner or later.
Yeah.
If you are going to say to American streamers, you've got to take 5% of your profits and pay into this CanCon system, but you can't actually benefit from these funds because you're American. Only Canadians, even if you go and you film in Canada and everybody involved is Canadian,
right,
if the IP is owned by Netflix, you can't have that money. That's going to be a trade issue. And now that's come up.
That's right. Just because our government treats our media like a charity case does not mean that other countries are going to feel the same way.
The digital services tax, Carney quickly scrapped, elbows down on that one.
Yep.
Prime Minister Carney in Canada caved to President Trump in the United States of America. And it was a mistake for Canada to vow to implement that tax that would have hurt our tech companies here in the United States.
And now Carney says C-18, the Online News Act, he is considering rescinding it.
Bill C-18 stands in our way to get back onto Facebook and Instagram. Are the Liberals looking for an alternative or rescinding that so that we can get that news back on those important platforms?
I'll say this, Steve. Thank you for the question. It's part of our thinking around that.
That is the one that has resulted in some good and some bad for old Jess.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot share any of our content or any news content on Facebook or Instagram or Threads, because Facebook opted out of the Online News Act.
It is extremely disappointing to see that Facebook continues to refuse to accept its responsibility towards our democracies by refusing to pay the fair share for Canadians to get local news and independent, rigorous journalistic content.
And now we're this bizarre Galapagos island of no news available, which is why Carney wants to get rid of it.
In a time when people are going to those places for news because they're not going to actual news sites anymore.
Yes, and we have documented just how ridiculous this is, because now you've got a dumpster company in Regina, which is like the key information source.
They post up to 30 times a day on their Facebook and Instagram. I checked it out. So they have a total of 150,000 followers. So that's over half the population of Regina. They just cover Regina. So I'm just curious.
They have 150,000 followers?
Between Instagram and Facebook, yeah.
Wait,
and there's only 250,000 people in Regina.
And it's mostly like Regina news?
Yeah, 100% Regina news.
But news is banned on Facebook.
So we'll get into why.
But garbage isn't.
Exactly. That's
oh
the key
God,
to this.
Oh my God, he's a genius. There's no law against misinformation and disinformation. There's nothing stopping bad actors. When people have an itch to scratch about, I want true information, I want to know what's going on, there's no shortage of bad actors there.
Yeah.
All that you can't get is news.
Yeah.
So Carney, I think, is targeting that for a good reason. Like, this is a f***ed up situation that Trudeau has left me with.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if he rescinds the Online News Act in the interest of getting local news in the hands of regular Canadians, he will simultaneously be taking money out of the hands of local news sites. Because while Facebook opted out of the Online News Act, Google did not.
Google wanted certainty about the amount of compensation it would have to pay to Canadian news outlets. And I can say today that Google will be compensating our news organization with $100 million annually, and it will be indexed to inflation.
Full disclosure, while Canada Land does not take any newspaper bailout money, we do not take any media funding from government, we absolutely are going to take essentially a licensing deal from Google, which I feel A-OK about. And that money is going to disappear if the Online News Act goes away.
Why do you call it a licensing deal, though?
It's a forced licensing deal. That's essentially what it is. If Facebook said, we're no longer going to scrape news data, we're no longer going to allow people to post news data, so we're not paying into this. Google made the decision, well, we want to be able to include news data.
Right.
The government said you can't have it for free anymore.
Right.
So essentially, what do they get for the money they're giving? They get the ability to use our data, which I'm calling a licensing deal. I never really bought the argument that, like, Google steals the news, but I do buy the argument that Google AI steals the news.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at. So
it's the actual letter of the contract. I would far prefer to sit down with Google as a business and license my content to them for scraping on the merits of my business, saying like, oh, because where it actually matters if our information is good or useful or not, I'd rather provide that kind of value to them.
Right.
I'll take it.
Good luck to you doing it as an individual. I think it's going to be a collective package.
Which
is
why this legislation,
Google.
That's another reason for this legislation, is Google's, the small players like Candleland are going to get shut out if it's got to be one at a time.
But it's a licensing deal to you in that you can now be a blue line in the search results when somebody Googles something.
Yes.
But less and less people are Googling things like that. And Google is now summarizing that content up at the top so that nobody is actually clicking on any of those blue links. And it's just being incorporated into the Google site. So when you're saying it's a licensing deal, right now it's just a licensing deal to still be a blue line, but it's not a licensing deal yet for it to be incorporated into Google Gemini's AI-generated summaries.
This is technically very true, and here we are conflating issues of principle and issues of legality. Because the reason why we don't take money that's just sitting there on the table for us in the government's media subsidies is that I just have a principle against taking money from the government that we cover.
Fair. But this Google money right now, it's nothing to Google. It's a lot to media companies here in Canada. But it's really just like sit tight, put a pin in it for now, and they're going to distribute that over the next 5 years. But by the end of that 5 years, the way that people consume media is going to change entirely.
For sure. For sure.
Entirely.
And I'll say this to this question of the ghost of Justin Trudeau.
This may be my last day here in this office.
And his media reforms, his media dreams, his media ambitions.
And that's why here to tell you all that we got you.
Yes, it all got carnied.
Yeah.
But we are not done with Justin Trudeau when it comes to media.
You'll always find me alongside you, cheering along.
When you funnel hundreds of millions of dollars into a dying industry, you change that industry.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it for Xavier, for Ella Grace and Hadrian.
Old players stick around longer than they would have.
Sure.
And I've done it for your kids, too. I've done it with you.
And they don't make changes they might have?
That's right.
And new players have some disincentives.
Their future and your future is now in your hands. Merci, mes amis. Merci.
Ronit, you're an old hand at this now. You know how to duly note stories.
I am. I love the duly noted. Now I've got so many, I don't know which one to choose.
Pick your favorite one and please duly note something that the people should pay attention to.
I'd like to duly note a phenomenon on TikTok. So I'm on TikTok more than I have ever been before. And what I'm noticing now, or there is this, it's this trend on TikTok right now. It's a phenomenon and it's a hashtag that is LA Music Festival.
Today is the first day I'm hearing anything about the music festival that is currently going on in LA.
The biggest music festival of our lives is happening right now, but the algorithm isn't covering it.
People are overtaking the highway and they're not talking about it.
Have you guys heard about the LA Music Festival? It actually started a while back, but it's still going on.
What's happening is being suppressed.
And the premise of this hashtag and this trend is that there are thousands of people who have been protesting on the streets of LA for over a month now, 24/7, and the media is not reporting on it. This is the premise that these TikTokers are using. And so they hashtag their videos LA Music Festival so that they can talk about these protests and allude to them, and in that way, jam the TikTok algorithm and jam the media that has been thwarting this story and not publicizing it. And the images behind the TikTok talking heads are images from previous protests, drone imagery of the Boston Marathon, AI-generated images of crowds. There is not that amount of people protesting on the streets of LA. There are, and I spoke with a friend of mine, a photographer out in LA, Michelle Groskoff, and I said, what's going on? Are there protests going on 24/7 in front of the federal building in LA? And she's like, no. There's like 50 to 100 every day, and they're protesting ICE, and they're protesting immigration policy and that sort of thing. And that's fair, and we've been seeing that. But the premise that these TikTok influencers have right now, that there is this assumption that the news is not reporting something, and they're assuming that we know. We are jamming the TikTok algorithm. We are thwarting the system, and everybody search LA Music Festival. And the way that they describe it is using language that's specific to a music festival, but countering it with imagery from these protests.
We're talking about very specific music festivals like this.
The No King's Day kind of music.
It's incredible the stamina that the performers have to continue to play at the LA Music Festival and keep everything going.
I think I followed that. So there is no LA Music Festival.
No.
What there is a 50 to 100 person protest against ICE.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But the protesters are convinced that they're not getting media attention because the algorithm, or they're not surfacing on TikTok, or they're not getting media attention, or both.
Why isn't the LA Times reporting on this? This is what they're saying. There are thousands of people. It's a mass movement. Everybody get together. The revolution has started.
The line that the media is misrepresenting or underrepresenting it is something that I think is common to protests since Year Aleph, whether or not it's true. But in this case, it's let's fool the TikTok algorithm with a fake hashtag. And meanwhile, let's lie about our numbers through misleading video imagery.
That's right. And let's boost our engagement by using this hashtag. So you're finding TikTok influencers who had very low views and comments and likes and shares now going viral, millions and millions of likes and shares because they're jumping on this hashtag. It's a trend.
Because anybody who's chasing views on TikTok is like, well, what's trending?
Exactly.
So now let's make the anti-ICE thing trend, but through the guise of, all right, strange world we live in. I missed that completely. So thank you for duly noting it. Duly noted. That is our show for today. Thank you for joining me. I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send, that email address. Ronit, where can people find you?
You can find The Grain, where we talk about the pleasure and the peril of AI and the future of creativity. The podcast is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the video podcast on YouTube. And you can find my Substack newsletter at thegrainai.substack.com. To learn more about The Grain, go to thegrain.ai.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Tristan Campicchione. Our director of audio is Max Collins, who also did the fact check on this episode. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
It's like to live.